when we start having conversations with them, let's discuss how we'll have those conversations, right? Like, if the insurer comes back saying, like, look, your client doesn't have employee training in place, we're not going to offer coverage. What you'll usually hear from me is like, well, you offer employee training as a risk management service to your clients. Write the business, we'll get them to sign up for it, and then they'll be the risk that you want them to be, right? But if as a broker, you just accept that as a reason for declining to write the risk, you're not really doing a service to your client, and you're not taking advantage of the full cyber insurance value package outside of just the contract itself.
Do you want to hear about the latest developments in the cyber market and learn best practices and thought leadership from cyber insurance and security experts? We talk all things cyber insurance industry, international growth, cyber claims, and more. Welcome to the Cyber Insurance Leaders Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Hess. Stay tuned.
Good morning and good evening. Good afternoon. It just feels like evening. Jonathan, pleasure to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
Cool. All right. Well, I'd like to give people the opportunity to introduce themselves, talk a little bit about, well, let's start with you. Tell us about yourself.
Yeah, for sure. Jonathan Weeks. I am Hub International's cyber product leader for Canada. So I have general oversight of cyber as an insurance product across Hub and all of its offices across Canada. And then I lead the cyber practice based in Ontario. So I have a great team of brokers who support our clients in managing their cyber risk and cyber insurance programs. I've been with Hub for about a year, and I've been with some other large insurers and brokers throughout my career, primarily with a focus on technology and cyber. So I'm excited to be here.
Okay, cool. Well, you've covered a lot of ground there in terms of your intro. You know, obviously you're focused on the Canadian market. What size of clients would you say you're really focused on? What do you see the most of?
Yeah, I would say all sizes. You know, as a brokerage, we support clients of all sizes. My team, we generally support maybe larger clients, so that mid to large market client. But as an organization, we support clients across the country of all sizes, of all industries, in managing their cyber risk. So we really don't discriminate. Okay. We will support whoever needs our support.
So who in Canada, I guess, is buying the insurance in terms of sector and size? Who do you really see buying it?
Yeah, I think all of them. How easy it is for different sectors to buy insurance is a different question. So, you know, we have retail, manufacturing, technology firms that we work with, and then we also work with some of the public sector, so higher education, municipalities, so on and so forth, who might have a little bit of a harder time buying cyber right now. But we certainly help folks of all industries.
Okay. And what would you consider your company's strength when it comes to cyber?
Making it relatable. So, you know, it can be intimidating chatting about cyber risk and cyber security and cyber insurance. And I think what we managed to do is just make it a little bit more digestible for our clients and making sure that they can understand it in a way where they can then communicate that internally and improve their risk overall.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks for all that intro and background on yourself and your company and some about your clients. I'd like to kind of shift over into a lot of thought leadership questions. So the first one I wanted to ask you was one of the maybe common things I've seen is how clients are seeing cyber risk. What kinds of conversations do you find yourself having when you're talking with these clients? Like, what do you see them doing?
Yeah, you know, we sometimes have to shift the conversation towards risk, right? So I think a common belief that we see and that we disagree with is that the more technology you have at your disposal, the better you can protect yourself. So a lot of companies, when we speak to them about their governance controls and how they manage cyber risk in general, they go straight into, you know, we bought this, we implemented this technology, we bought this. And when they go into this discussion about their tech stack and, you know, all the things they've implemented, as we go deeper and deeper, we kind of start to realize that, you know, they bought all this stuff, but they don't necessarily know how to use it. And the feedback is like, okay, great. I'm glad you have all this at your disposal, but, you know, how are you using it? How are you making sure it's being put to use?
Okay. Yeah. Is there a lot of variation in your mind in terms of sector size that you're seeing that, or is this just kind of, it's a bit random, like you just run into a lot of companies where they still feel that way?
Yeah, I think it varies across all sizes of clients, all industries of clients. Of course, depending on whether they're more exposed to sort of operational related risks versus privacy related risks, it might differ where they prioritize. But it's across the board, you know, just organizations of all industries and all sizes who think that this is the right approach, or they aren't quite sure how to best manage the risk.
Okay, great. So I read a lot of cybersecurity press. You know, obviously I came from originally cybersecurity community years and years ago. So I appreciate things have, you know, changed over time, but I try to be connected into that. And I see a lot of, my perception is sometimes maybe there's a clash between cybersecurity, cyber insurance. Like these are very different things. They sort of, you know, let me ask the question this way. What would you say the role is for cyber insurance and kind of this broader cyber ecosystem?
Yeah. And you know what? I'm super careful about how I answer this question because there are very strong opinions. You know, I'm not a believer that cyber insurance fixes a client's cyber problems. You know, insurance is there to address the financial risk associated with how well you manage exposures as an organization. So I think a misconception that we often see is that people think that insurance brokers or insurers think that they are God's gift to cybersecurity. But cyber insurance and insurance in general is a very important part of managing risk. So, you know, back in the day, cyber insurance was really, really easy to get. It was extremely inexpensive for the amount of capital you had access to from an insurance perspective. And there wasn't a whole lot of review done around governance and controls. And at the time, a lot of clients, especially our sophisticated clients, would give us a hard time. They were like, you guys are deploying tens, if not hundreds of million dollars of capacity, barely asking me anything about my organization. But that has changed a lot. And I think, you know, despite that changing over the past 3 to 4 years, there's still a lot of that mindset that, you know, insurance doesn't know what they're doing. They don't know the right questions to ask. Yeah. But they've done a really, really good job of aligning themselves with industry standards and frameworks, asking relevant questions, not only around governance and controls, but risk overall, and actually addressing cyber as a risk. So, you know, the conversation is always a little bit tough between cybersecurity professionals, cyber risk management professionals, and then cyber insurance professionals. There's always been little pockets of disagreement, but I think we're starting to reach a point where there's an understanding between the three of those functions that we really need to work together rather than work against each other.
So would you say in Canada, at least, you are starting to see maybe all of these folks being involved in the buying conversation?
I think we are. And I think it's something we'll have to continue to work on. But a lot of insurers have taken some really meaningful steps towards supporting their clients and managing their risk overall. And the function of a broker even has changed quite a bit over the past several years, where before a broker's role was just to place the insurance program, like the traditional broker for property, casualty, so on and so forth. But cyber insurance brokers have really had to skill up over the past couple of years to make sure that they understand the risk. We'll never claim to be cybersecurity professionals. I want to make sure that's very clear. But we at least know how to have the conversations with our clients, the folks that they're relying upon, and then the insurers around how our clients are managing that risk and how we can support them in managing that risk.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. I guess there's probably a lot of directions you can take that conversation. But let me ask this. What would you like to see organizations do more of? Like you're meeting with these clients, what would you really like to see them do more of?
Yeah, there's a lot, but there's a couple of things that I would probably focus my attention on when it comes to advising clients and organizations. And that's taking meaningful steps to actually assess their cyber risk on a regular basis. You know, I recommend at least annually. You can either do sort of a self-guided cyber self-assessment, or you can bring in a third party to support you through that process. But on an annual basis, you should be checking in on where you are, your level of maturity against industry standards, but also building out targets and roadmaps towards your target state as an organization. You know, resiliency is sort of the buzzword out there right now around reaching a resilient state as an organization, which also means that you're continuing to develop and grow. So I think that's the first thing that I would encourage clients to do, focus on doing an assessment on an annual basis. Okay. And then, you know, I think the other thing I encourage organizations to do is to get more people involved, right? I think there's this misconception that cyber is just a technology risk. So as long as you have a great CISO or a great director of information technology or security, you're good to go. But realistically, cyber risk touches every part of the organization, from IT or IS to, you know, your broader tech group, to legal, to HR, and the front lines.
Yeah.
You know, everyone should have some form of involvement around the management. First of all, the discovery of what your risk is as an organization, but also the management of that risk on a continuous basis over time.
Okay, yeah, and that ties in, you know, nicely to what you said earlier around kind of shifting from being so tech focused and having it be all about the technology to really having it be about risk. And so you need all those stakeholders involved.
Exactly.
Yeah, it makes sense. So I guess maybe let me shift gears a bit and I'll just throw kind of a big picture question at you. What would you say insurers need to do from a cyber insurance perspective in order to create a more sustainable cyber insurance market?
Yeah, you know,
it's a meaty one. Sorry, it's a lot. No,
I laugh because there's a lot of talk online about what is a sustainable cyber insurance market and whether or not that's even possible, or if it's the responsibility of insurers or brokers or who's to build this. And I like that you asked that question because I don't think it's a question that insurance carriers actually ask brokers often. And yeah, who is better equipped to advise on that than a broker and their clients when we help our clients and support them in assessing and managing that cyber risk on a daily basis, right? Like we have pretty good insights into what our clients want from the cyber insurance market, how as a market we can maintain and charge appropriately for the insurance coverage, what risks or controls or governance standards we need to be looking at. We're best equipped. So I think the first thing that carriers could look at is just asking brokers, either for access to their clients or ask brokers what they're seeing from their clients on a day-to-day basis so that they can tailor their products to that. And I know, I get it. You know, everything, you can't say that everything is insurable. It's just not possible. But there's certainly things that we can do and steps that we can take as a insurance community to make sure that these products are working in a way that's both sustainable to the best of our ability, but actually adding value for our clients.
Okay. I guess, you know, what kinds of maybe trends are you seeing along that front? Where are we going to in terms of what some of the insurers are doing to make it more sustainable? What are you seeing out there?
Yeah, I mean, the story around sustainability, I mean, insurance is a for-profit industry. So target position for a carrier is to be profitable. And over the past couple of years, we saw rates skyrocket in a way that we've never seen in cyber before. And part of that was to ensure that long term, this is a sustainable market. And we're dealing with a risk that is very human, right? We're combating humans and criminals. It's hard to really pinpoint on anything that's sustainable. But what we're seeing insurers do to drive some sustainability is making slight changes to wordings, right? The actual insurance contract itself. So they're taking steps to either tailor it to specific industries. I think that's been a bit of a slower process than we'd like to see as brokers. But they're also taking steps to limit certain coverage under policies to make sure that they're not just writing checks constantly. And, you know, as a broker, we want our clients to be as covered, to be covered for as much as possible within a reasonable premium. But we also have to understand that insurers can't just give away all of their capital for next to nothing and then cover everything under the sun. So, you know, we are seeing changes to the insurance contract over years. Some of them are very minimum, some are more material to clients, and some of them are just untested. And I won't go do a deep dive right now on, you know, the implications of war under cyber policies or terrorism under cyber policies. But we're seeing a lot of action around that right now in the cyber insurance industry. Some of it is being driven by unknowns, and a lot of it is being driven by experiences over the past several years. What we're also seeing is insurers also stepping up their use of technology in the support of their clients and risk management tools in support of their clients. So anyone who has purchased cyber insurance over the past couple of years, what they would likely see is that there is some involvement from some sort of, say, perimeter scanning tool like a BitSight or a security scorecard. Some insurers have their own proprietary tools that they use. Insurers are starting to catch up to what their customers are doing and using those tools to help guide them if they don't have access to them. And they're starting to align a lot more with what the industry, the cybersecurity industry, is actually doing as a whole. And they're having a lot more conversations with cybersecurity professionals to help advise them on how to best manage their portfolios and manage the risk from an insurer perspective.
Okay. Yeah. So it's both the product and kind of maybe the services or the risk management side. I don't know if I should ask this question, but I mean, do you think that, you know, I feel like certain insurers are focusing a lot around the services now and maybe not talking so much about the coverage, but I still wonder if that's the right approach, because I still feel like people don't know or don't understand the coverage and how it responds. Like, how could this be, you know, how should they be communicating this? Is it all about the services, product plus services, the product, like any of your ideas in that sphere at all, we'll go with.
You know what? It's funny. A lot of cyber insurers have offered these risk management services quite literally for over a decade or more in some cases, depending on how long they've been riding the line. It's just, they were never really pushed or promoted from a carrier perspective. So the actual insurer, I think those risk management tools are a really, really good way for them to manage or support their clients in managing the risk. The wording is the wording, right? In some way, the wording is there to protect the client, but it's also written in a way that protects the insurer to a certain extent through exclusions and conditions and so on and so forth. It's a broker's job to focus the attention on making sure their client understands the insurance contract, understands its limitations, understands how it will respond in the event of an actual cyber incident. But I think, you know, we've seen it more over the past year and a half, 2 years. Carriers are pushing these services really, really hard. And they're pushing it because they know if clients are equipped to manage their risk more effectively, the likelihood of a loss goes down, which means that likelihood of profitability goes up as a carrier, which is their ultimate goal, right? So, you know, some of them do it better than others. I could name names. No, I won't name names because I know people are biased. But, you know, some of the new players in the industry are doing a really, really good job of providing clients with tools and resources to manage that risk. And what we're finding is that a lot of the traditional carriers that we've worked with over the past couple of decades are starting to also push that a lot more. And I think we're all reaching a point where we're a little bit more satisfied with where we stand. But it varies. Like, some offer some really great solutions that if you were to go out and purchase that on your own, you're probably paying $5,000, $10,000, sometimes $15,000 with a third party vendor to get access to an equivalent tool. And then others provide more of those soft tools, like, you know, employee training services, or, you know, an hour with a breach coach to help build out your incident response plan or review your plan. And I think these tools all add value. But what we need to do as an industry is explain to the client that they're available to them and maybe help them determine which they'll find the most value in, so that they're not just signing up for whatever for the sake of having access to it.
Yeah. That makes sense. I think even just that, I always feel like there's a lot of value in getting the clients, especially if they're smaller or mid-tier, to even think about these things. And so even if, you know, risk management package X is better than risk management package Y in terms of the actual solutions, you know, there's still value in both of them, which is basically we've got the client thinking about it and looking at where the claims are and trying to do something about it before they get hit. So
And And you know, I think like a good broker really looks at the entire risk holistically, right? So if I'm working with a client, they send me their completed application, or we've done a risk assessment for them, which will guide the insurance process. If I am going through that and I see that there are certain things that they're missing, like employee training, for example, a good broker would sit down with that client and be like, look, you don't have this in place right now. Most of the insurance carriers we approach will actually have that as a value-added service for you. When we start having conversations with them, let's discuss how we'll have those conversations, right? Like, if the insurer comes back saying, like, look, your client doesn't have employee training in place, we're not going to offer coverage. What you'll usually hear from me is like, well, you offer employee training as a risk management service to your clients. Write the business, we'll get them to sign up for it, and then they'll be the risk that you want them to be, right? But if as a broker, you just accept that as a reason for declining to write the risk, you're not really doing a service to your client, and you're not taking advantage of the full cyber insurance value package outside of just the contract itself.
Yeah. Yeah, makes sense. I always thought, you know, that sometimes the integration is a bit bumpy, you know, like you kind of think, right, but you have the underwriting process, you have this risk management component of it, like make sure those are really tightly connected. And you know, different insurers are probably at different levels of capability there, but it's not always necessarily about having to build a bunch of tools or whatever the case may be. It's more like it's the process integration, right? That's kind of what you're talking about, which is, well, you've already got this. Why don't we just force them to use it? You know?
Yeah.
So, well, cool. Well, I guess I'll change topics a little bit. What are kind of looking at challenges or things you're, you know, problems you see, things you like to solve? What are your top three?
Yeah. If we want a top three, I think the first one is just keeping up with industry standards from an information security perspective and even from a regulatory and a legal perspective. Because these policies touch all aspects of cyber risk from privacy to operational, we really do have to keep up with it as a broker in order to advise our clients on those risks. So keeping up with shifting security standards, shifting regulations, the legal landscape is really, really challenging. But when you invest time into that, we do find that our clients provide us with the feedback that it does add value outside of just that insurance. And it allows us to be viewed as a trusted risk partner, right? A partner in managing cyber risk rather than just being a broker. Another challenge that we face is just the volatility of the cyber insurance market over the past couple of years. Any broker or underwriter who's been doing this for a while saw, you know, rates start probably here and then they dropped quite a bit and then we saw them go up a lot. I used to have hair, just for perspective as to how challenging it's been. It went up a lot through late 2020 through to probably mid to late 2022. And now we're seeing it sort of stabilize and go down a little bit. Communicating that to a client can be extremely challenging, especially because of how short those dips and increases have been in cyber relative to other lines of insurance, right? So with property casualty, you usually see longer trends of ups and downs and so on and so forth, but cyber, it's been like kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
So communicating that has been a bit of a challenge. And then I think the third thing, and it's a practiced sort of skill, but I think the third thing is just communicating to clients regularly, even on an annual basis for current buyers, what the purpose of their insurance policy is. And I say purpose because we have certain clients who treat insurance as like this stopgap solution to actually addressing their cyber risk and exposures. And then we have others who are on the extreme side where they're saying like, we will never use that policy. We basically just have it in place because a client of ours said that we have to have a $10, $20 million limit in place. So a challenge is making sure clients understand what is the purpose of a risk transfer vehicle like insurance? What purpose does it serve within their overall risk management strategy? And I think that's why it's important to lead with risk. Because if a client doesn't really understand why they're buying the coverage, it makes it really hard for them to use it when the time comes, God forbid, if they have a breach. So I think just, you know, there's keeping up with standards, communicating the volatility that has been the cyber insurance market over the past couple of years. And then the last one is just making sure there's a continuing understanding by clients and industry as to the purpose of cyber insurance. It's very different from other lines of insurance. And it changes much more quickly than other lines of insurance.
Yeah, the volatility conversation is an interesting one. Like we've definitely seen a lot of volatility. Just I'm our insurance buyer. Some of it's us as a company. You know, we're relatively young, so our pace of growth is aggressive. But the ups and the downs in my mind, I'm kind of roughly estimating like, right, okay, here's where we are. This is our coverage, you know, sort of that sort of thing. But I mean, I don't know what you call that. It's kind of like the per unit cost is done this and this and this. It's fun being a buyer. Like it's been really interesting because I think I'm probably a typical small business insurance buyer, except for the fact that I pay more attention to the cyber bits. So it's when I feel like I have a perspective on it, like this is what I see as an SME. It's definitely been the ups and downs.
Can you tell your counterparts on the buying side that it's fun and it's you like it? Because they won't all agree.
I don't think it's been a bad process at all. Like in general, I've been pretty happy with everything. I think it's if you didn't understand it though, I think it would be very frustrating. You're like, wait, I was paying this last year. Why am I paying this? And then you sort of in your mind, you get used to the fact, you know, you're going to get slammed. And then next year, probably like, oh, wait, and maybe it's a happy conversation where you're like, oh, it's 20% less. Hey, that's great. Why was I paying so much last year again? You know, maybe I don't know.
They do.
But I do. But I, you know, obviously, because I'm paying attention to the market, like I kind of know it's coming. I'm like, oh, and you're just kind of like you're waiting. And like, how bad this is going to be? And you're like, OK, well, you know, especially with us, like, having shifted more North America than we used to be, like obviously there's risks element, you know, risk elements of you've gone into North America, you're in a different market, you know, your tech B&L is going to be different. And then the size thing, because we're kind of growing at a certain pace that you do as a young company. It's all right though. I can't complain. I think it has been a perspective though of what you see and what you don't see as a small business. And maybe if I look at the other kinds of insurance, it's amazing how little attention you pay sometimes.
Yeah. It's because the other lines of insurance have been there forever. Right. And it's kind of just like, yeah, I got to have this. Let me buy it.
You're like, what do I general, need to go to the broker? What do I need? What's the law? You know, what am I going to get hit on?
Exactly.
You know, techie and all, I pay a lot of attention to, even though techie and all and I have never been friends. not just as a buyer. I just, you know, anybody knows me is like, oh, it's so liability focused. I hate liability. It causes me headaches. I'm not a lawyer. And then you sort of get to the cyber part, which is like, oh, this is cool. This is novel. I like this. So I guess, Going on to the next question, data. I wanted to ask about data.
Yeah.
So like a lot of people, you know, as long as I've been in cyber insurance, or at least last 7 or 8 years of it, everybody's always talking about data. They've got this data, they got that data, they got this special tool that does this thing.
Yeah.
You know, what kind of data would you like? I never know what people are doing with it. So what kind of data is valuable to you? How do you find it and how do you track it? So kind of three questions there.
Yeah. You know, I think loss information is really, really important for us from an insurance perspective because it allows us to see where the losses are coming from both an industry and a customer size perspective. And it provides us with the information that we need in order to advise our clients a little bit better. So whether we're drawing that from our insurance carrier partners, if we're drawing it from our own claims teams in terms of what they're seeing as they support clients with navigating through cyber incidents, or if we're pulling it through industry experts. You know, there's a lot of great reports out there around, you know, like the cost of a data breach, the types of breaches they're seeing, what was the initial cause, so on and so forth. All of that feeds into a really great strategy around how we help our clients see their exposure and how they address it, whether it is through a risk transfer vehicle or agreeing to retain that risk as an organization, or just shifting how they operate as an organization in order to minimize the potential financial impact on them. So loss information is so critical to what we do as a broker. You know, there are other lines of insurance where things like benchmarking, so just comparing, again, if we focus on insurance, comparing how much your peers buy versus what you buy, I think that's somewhat useless from a cyber insurance perspective. Who cares what your peers are buying? You have two completely different risk management strategies. So what they buy has nothing to do with you buy. You can use that, I guess, to see if you're not taking the right approach, but cyber is one of those lines where, you know, loss modeling, so determining and quantifying your actual exposure, I think is much more important than benchmarking info. So, you know, loss information helps us build those models and find ways to help our clients see how they're potentially exposed rather than what their friends next door are doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, what would you like to see more of in the Canadian broking community, like amongst yourselves? Like, what would you like to see more of?
I think collaboration. There's always that worry when like a bunch of brokers get in a room together that we're like colluding together against the client and the insurers. I think if we look at all the cyber, I'll say cyber practice or cyber product leaders across Canada on the broker side of things, a lot of us are friends, and a lot of us do have, you know, off the record conversations about what we're seeing and, you know, the trends and if we're seeing a lot of claims or whatever it might be. I think we need to see even more collaboration across the country on this. You know, cyber as an insurance product is, I don't want to say it's in its infancy, but it's certainly not as mature as the property, the casualty, even the D&O market. So the sharing of that information, what that'll allow us to do is build standards for our clients, much like we have in the property and casualty space, make sure that we are not giving away sort of our strategies and our, you know, our crown jewels or whatever you want to call it, but making sure that clients can get a good understanding of the risk, the insurance product, what the expectations are across the board, so that ultimately we're all supporting our clients in the best way possible. I'm fine with a little competition. So if we gather as a group and we share information and then use that against me, good on you. You're smart for doing that. I think collaboration will ultimately lead to a better standard across the board, both from a product, an advisory, and just a client support function perspective.
Okay, cool. All right, so last question of our sort of thought leadership questions. Current events. I always like to ask about current events. You know, what do you think is really interesting out in the cyber world right now?
There's a lot going on. And if we look at current events, what we see a lot of talk around is AI and generative AI and AI. And the suspected or potential impact it could have on cyber. When I speak to a lot of, you know, industry experts or incident response firms or even, you know, some of our law firm partners that we work with here, they talk about how AI is sort of starting to creep its way into the cyber process, at least in a more obvious way, especially when we look at things like phishing campaigns and those types of things. You know, threat actors are using AI to throw out more authentic looking emails to the point where it's really, really hard to decipher whether it's legit or not. So you just have everyone reporting everything to spam if they're well-trained.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that we're seeing quite a bit of. You know, we chatted a little bit earlier about sometimes there being that, you know, difference in opinions between the security community in the insurance community around cyber as a risk and how it's managed and how it's transferred. We're seeing a lot more talk pop up about that lately too. There's been some pretty big decisions on some very long tailed suits around insurers versus clients and all of that. And we're starting to see a lot more chat about that too. So I think as those discussions start and we have, you know, civilized and educated discussions about that in whatever forms we have access to, ultimately it'll be a good thing. But we kind of have to, again, we have to start coming together a little bit more on all sides to make sure that we're having the same conversation rather than being combative about it. You spend, if you're, you know, connected in the cyber insurance space or the cybersecurity space on something like LinkedIn, you see some back and forth there and some pretty strong opinions about insurance and even just like the best way to handle cyber. And there's a certain degree of consistency, but then there's like these wild opposite ends of a spectrum as to how to best manage this. And I think as more of those discussions happen, depending on how we address it as a community, it can either get a lot worse or we can start to see us move towards a space where we're all coming together to support a client as best as possible in managing that cyber risk.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for that. I'd like to ask a few closing questions, which I think folks find interesting. I do at least. So first one, how did you get into the insurance industry? How'd you end up here?
Yeah, it's by chance. And I hate to say, because we all say it's like, I fell into insurance, but I really did. Like, I went to school for marketing and then there was a job fair at my school. Every student is like desperate for a job upon graduating. So I was like, okay, this insurance company is hiring. I'm going to get a job. That's exactly what I did. And that's exactly where I'll stay because God knows I wouldn't survive in the actual marketing or advertising space.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, I do think it is funny when you, I think with insurance, when you run into somebody that says, oh, I got a degree in insurance, that's the outlier. You're like, really? Yeah. My father or my mother, or you're like, okay, now I get it. It's a family thing. But
exactly.
I think people, insurance just has such a reputation that's different than how it actually is when you're inside the industry.
Yeah.
And
we have fun. I got to say, we work hard, but we play hard. Like the insurance industry is a really fun, interesting place to be. And you're right. Yeah. Now there are a lot more programs tailored towards risk management and insurance. Like my daughter's applying to schools right now. And I can tell you, at one of the schools, there's a business insurance program and she applied to it. So it's changing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's, well, and then hopefully, you know, people will see that now. They'll realize kind of all the different opportunities. Cause the course requirements, like all the different courses you take. I'm blanking on the word right now, but they'll see that and they'll go, oh, wow, that's what insurance is. Oh, I could do this. I could take a more mathematically oriented route, more of maybe a sales oriented route. You know, kind of maybe you're someone who likes to handle claims, like maybe more of a legal type of personality.
Exactly.
So, well, what would you recommend to anyone who wants to have a successful career in insurance?
Yeah, I mean, I think to have a successful career in insurance, you got to learn the basics first. So like that P&C foundation, those are property and casualty foundation, does a really good job of just getting you into the industry. It helps you understand how the products work in general, both from a liability and from a first party perspective. So getting that foundation builds a great broker or underwriter. But I do encourage folks to specialize, you know, even if you do stay on that property and casualty side of things, find a specialty within that space, go into mining, go into real estate, sort of carve out a niche for yourself. And I think if you manage to do that, it helps to build credibility for you in the industry. But it also opens up opportunities for you to take what you learn in those specific spaces and even transfer that outside of the insurance industry. What we've seen a lot of in insurance over the past couple of years is we have a lot of industry experts coming into the industry. So external industry, like real estate, mining, so on and so forth, coming into insurance. Yeah. But we also have a lot of insurance people who are leaving insurance and going outside.
It completely makes sense because you gain going in that direction. I was just thinking about this as you were talking. You gain such a understanding of an industry. That's part of it. I would say the other part of it is like business, really so much of what I do day to day is all about risk. Like if I make this decision, what does that do to our overall risk profile as a company? If I do this or that or the other thing. And I think risk is just underpins everything in business.
As you build a career in insurance, like focus more so on understanding risks. You do have to understand the products, but if you understand the risk, that's where you're going to find clients that stick with you for years. And that's where you build that credibility and those transferable skills. So that's what I encourage folks to do.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for that. Who should be our next podcast guest?
Do you want names or just...
if you want to, it's up to you. I think it's a question. Sometimes I don't ask it because I feel like it's kind of putting somebody on the spot. But
I like everyone. I'm a pretty easygoing guy. I won't give a name, but my recommended next guest is a company that has gone through a breach recently, like within the last 1 to 2 years, because it's been very different for them than it would have been for folks prior to that. I think if they've gone through a breach in the past couple of years, they're navigating a different security environment, a different regulatory environment, a different legal environment. And they probably have some good nuggets that they could provide as to how they navigated through that. Lessons learned, mistakes made. I think they'd be a great guest.
We've never had anyone like that. I like it. I need to find somebody.
And a lot of them are really happy to talk about it. Even if it wasn't the best story, like good news story, like they're willing to share their lessons learned, because I guarantee you they're a much better company now than they were prior to that incident.
That's a great idea. Cool. Well, I guess that's it for our questions. It's been a real pleasure chatting with you today, and thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
If you want to learn more about our host Anthony or his company Acerius, visit acerius.com. ASCERIS.com. Thanks to our friends at Savoo for producing this episode with us. See you next time.